Welcome back to the podcast, you guys. So, you know those coaches where you're on social media and they just like make you stop scrolling? You're like, okay, I'm invested in this person's business. Like, their content is awesome. The way they show up is awesome. The things they say are awesome. Just like massive thought leadership. And then on top of that, you look at their coaching and you're like, you know that they have an awesome coaching business. That is who Mike Milner is for me. I've watched his content for so long. He's an incredible online coach. He runs a fitness coaching business and he also helps coaches with their copywriting. And I brought him into today's episode and I'm really excited for you guys to listen in on this because we talk a little bit about what coaches need in order to really dial in their messaging and how to look at different frameworks that allow for you to be a better copywriter and be able to create a offer that your clients are just so bought into and that get them really, really incredible results. So excited for you guys to tune into today's episode with Coach Mike Milner. Let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Strive for Strength podcast. I'm your host, Kendall Strample. I'm an online wealth and business coach for huge visionary coaches just like you. And I'm here to help you compartmentalize your massive ideas and turn them into a step-by-step action plan. After scaling two coaching companies to multiple seven figures by the age of 23, I want to help you collapse time and give you the steps that you need in these short episodes. So get cozy. Let's dive in. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Have a really awesome guest here today who has a lot of experience in the space. I'm really excited to open up the dialogue, open up the conversation. So Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
So Mike, I've like followed you for quite some time now. And I will say out of like so many people I've seen in the space, you have just like a very well put together nutrition business. And I'm so curious, like I don't know too much about like where you first got started in the coaching space and with nutrition, but like what was the thing that made you choose the path of nutrition specifically?
Yeah, it was really from my own journey. Like a lot of us who get into this space, typically it's because of our own experience. I had no desire. I didn't even know that nutrition coaching was a thing. So when I was grew up an athlete and then went to college, picked up some typical like college kid habits and ate a lot and drank a lot. So I gained weight very quickly, as one tends to do when they're doing that. And I went down like the whole crash dieting rabbit hole because I didn't know any better. I was just always like active and playing sports. But once organized sports ended in college, I found myself like 80 pounds overweight and not knowing what to do. So did like the 1200 calorie meal plans and hours of cardio and lost like 80 pounds and then gained it back and then lost like 50 pounds and gained it back. And it was through that struggle that, you know, I ended up developing orthorexia. I had an obsession with clean eating. I found macros. I became obsessed with tracking macros. I had no social life. I stopped doing all the things that I love to do. Like I would tell my friends that I couldn't hang out because I couldn't track my macros perfectly if we went out for drinks. And I stopped going on vacations and traveling because that would, you know, cause me to backtrack. And so it was a really kind of dark time in my life. And eventually crawling out of that space and finding balance and actually like understanding strength training and nutrition and healthy habits. As most of us recognize, when we make a lot of mistakes over like a 10-year period, we're like, I don't want anybody else to go through that. So I would love to help people avoid all of those same mistakes and like condense the time that it takes them to find what I found. And so that was really the beginning. I started as a personal trainer, was working with people at a small gym. Most of them had the same struggle that I did, that nutrition was like the biggest sticking point. So they would be consistent. They would show up to their training sessions, do all the things, but they were never really progressing. And it was always nutrition. So again, I didn't even know that that was a thing. And I was like, I'm going to figure out how to make a career teaching nutrition. And then I looked into it. I was like, oh, I can actually do this. Got hired by another company, became a coach for them. Things didn't end so well with that company. And then I was kind of thrown into the deep end of, let me start a business. And I had no background in entrepreneurship, no idea what I was doing. But that was 5.5 years ago. And so here we are today.
Wow. That's crazy. It's like, you think back like only 5 years, right? Like you've developed something super cool. And I kind of want to go back to something that you said. I also had orthorexia and I know like being in that time frame, it's like everything is so particular. And like, I don't know if you kind of had that where, like you said, you know, you self-isolate a little bit. I'm curious, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, just like raw, honest thoughts on this. Do you think that that time was actually extremely productive for you? Because I know it's like a hyper-functional time in your life. Like, what do you think you got out of that time? And do you see yourself applying a lot of that now?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think the wake up call for me was that it made me recognize what I actually value because it took me away from those things. So I'm very much like my family's very close. We all get together frequently. We communicate a lot. And then all of a sudden I was like not going to like family events and not seeing my family as much. Same thing. I have a group of high school friends that we've stayed in touch for all the week. We still talk every single day and just like, we tell each other we love each other all the time. And that was like telling them I couldn't hang out. And I'm like, it just exposed what I actually care about in my life. And it kind of put it on Front Street where that like loneliness and that isolated feeling, was like, why do I feel this way? It made me search for something deeper than just, body weight. Because even through that time, I got to the smallest I've ever been. And so I went from like 260 to like 165. And
Wow.
I picked myself apart. I have like one single picture of myself at 160. I have a lot of pictures when I was overweight, but only one when I was at my smallest. And I know why, because I literally would stare in the mirror and just pick myself apart and critique every inch of my body, and it wasn't good enough, and I still didn't look good, and I was still overweight. And so I looked beyond just the scale. Like that was the thing that allowed me to realize that it was so much more than just weight, that something was missing, that I was trying to fill a void, that I had to search for a deeper meaning. Like if I kept thinking that my happiness was the next 10 pounds away, then it would never be where I am. And so it definitely created a very like introspective, reflective type period of my life that I think that was like the rock bottom that allowed me to find, what success and happiness actually looks like for me.
I'm curious. I've gotten asked this question before, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. As entrepreneurs, like we're kind of a little bit crazy, right? Like we really love what we do. And so I'm curious for you is like, did you notice like the energy that you put towards like food and clean eating? Did you ever notice that transfer to like other habits, but that were maybe like more beneficial, like pouring kind of like a similar energy where you're like really pouring your focus into one specific thing. Did you ever see that translate into like other areas of your life?
Oh, completely. When I started my business, it was like just trading one obsession for another. And so I think I've always said that my biggest gift is also my biggest curse. Like I operate with an obsession. I really, truly, when I am interested in something, I feel like I have to master it and I become obsessed with mastering it, but I'm also super impatient. And so there's like this balance of knowing how important it is to delay gratification. And I have since come to terms with the fact that my impatience has allowed me to be successful because I'm never the person that's like, I'm gonna wait until whenever. Like it's just go, go, go. I'm gonna jump in and I'm gonna figure it out because if I get started now, then I can master it sooner. But it's also been my biggest curse because I am really impatient and I'm like, why isn't stuff happening? And that has led me into some like destructive patterns where I'll burn myself out, I'll blow myself up, and like, that's shown up in nutrition. And then it also showed up in business, where when I started my business, I like sprinted out of the gates and things were happening so quickly that I found myself with 121 clients to myself, no free time, no life, and sleeping like 4 hours a night, trying to manage a massive client load and also not knowing like anything about actual business systems or processes that would make myself organized. It was just a total mess. So, yeah, I've definitely taken that obsessive tendency and shifted it more to the business side. And again, it's been like a whole other learning experience of I found what that looked like on nutrition and how to balance things appropriately. And now I'm still in the process of doing that in my like professional life.
Right. It's so great. I had a very similar scenario and situation. It was like back 2019, my business imploded, 112 clients on my own roster. And it's like crazy how to see that the space has evolved so much since then, and you've created something really cool. And I'm curious if that's what, because you do a lot of like the personality type diet, right? You have the neurotyping. So I'm curious, do you think that time also kind of bred the niche and the messaging that you now serve through nutrition coaching?
Yeah, I would say my methodology was really created through my experience with the company that I worked for before I started my business. So
Gotcha.
I started with like I was such a believer in just like calories in, calories out. I was like, it doesn't matter what you eat. It doesn't matter the quality of your food. It's literally just energy balance and nothing else matters. And then I started working with like real people in the real world and realized that there's this whole psychological component that drives everything. And the company that I worked for was very much in that, like, here's your macro plan, go follow your macros. And then if the client was like, hey, this isn't working, the like standard company answer was like, well, you need to hit your macros better. Like, obviously, if it's not working, you're just not hitting your macros. And then I was like, let me actually start communicating with people and see what's going on in their life. And that was like the eye-opening experience of it really never had anything to do with their nutrition or training. It was always like they were dealing with something really stressful at work or at home, or it was emotional eating, or it was their relationship with food, and it was all or self-limiting beliefs, how they communicate to themselves. And it was like, obviously, everything, like I've always been a student of psychology. And for some reason, I never thought to blend those two things, like psychology and nutrition. But then that was the thing that was so apparent. It's like, how can we have a physical transformation without the psychological like underpinning and foundation in place? So that was really what drove me to kind of create this top-down approach. Like what I call it is, if we don't start upstairs, what's between your ears, none of the physical results will matter and they won't be sustainable, even if we achieve them. So let's start with actual like behavior change and the psychology of behavior change and the psychology of goal achievement and all the things where there's this like there's so much research on it. And it's like the blueprint has been out there for so long, but yet the diet industry just keeps pushing people in the opposite direction of what we know to be true about how people actually change. And it's just a mismatch that I identified pretty early on. It was like, all right, well, this is going to be kind of what we hang our hat on in our nutrition coaching business.
Yeah, I mean, you found a really cool delivery method. And I found even just like as a business coach over the last few years, like that's one of the key pillars I see a lot of coaches miss is just like they're shooting their shot at like getting people results without like a specific methodology. So I'm curious for you because you have such a great method and it's been proven to work over and over again. So I'm curious for you in architecting that, like what was running through your head when you first got into that? Were you like, I need to create this like step-by-step blueprint for clients? How did you really come about like creating the actual method for your clients in the first place?
Yeah, so it really evolved over time. So in the beginning, it was literally just me knowing these things and people kind of gravitating towards just like me telling my story. They would, connect with my kind of hero's journey story that I would share. So they were really signing up for me in the beginning. And then I would go through like all of my like behavior change stuff, instilling these habits, talking through some of the mindset stuff that we talked through, doing a lot of like future self work, and they would see these amazing results. But I always described it as like, it depends. Like I didn't have a defined process. It was always like, you're gonna come into this program. I'm gonna do a personality assessment. I'm gonna ask you all these questions. And then it's gonna be an it depends situation. Whatever I learn about you, I'm gonna create this plan. And that worked in the beginning. And then I actually had a mentor early on who was like, you actually have to like define what you're doing and create a process that is repeatable. Otherwise, you're always going to be selling yourself. And again, I had no like business background or marketing background or anything. So that was all new to me. But then it made sense. And I was like, at first I pushed back and I was like, no, but there is no process. Like it's me, I'm the process. And they're like, no, you can't be.
You're the problem. You're the problem, not the
No.
process.
And then I like didn't know how to outline it. I didn't know how to create a actual like step-by-step thing that we do. So I just started writing down everything that I was doing for clients. And I just started documenting like each individual client that I was working with. And then there was all these common threads. And I was like, oh, it's actually pretty obvious what we do. So that was where it was like, step one, we understand your personality type. We start to align the plan with the way that your brain works. Step two, we typically, because I work with mostly people who have been dieting for a long time, we go through some sort of like reverse diet, metabolic restoration period of like, let's just get you to homeostasis. And then there's usually the fat loss phase and then some kind of lifestyle component. I was like, it's actually pretty clear. It's all outlined from what I've been doing with these clients. Now I just have to put it in a way that makes sense for the individuals who want to come work with us.
Yeah, it's like little did you know you're like writing a whole coach's playbook and like an SOP library for like your entire coaching structure, which is so cool. I like nerd out on that kind of stuff. And it's funny because I wanted to ask you this for that exact reason, because so many coaches are, you know, they think in the beginning, like, oh, I can't make a process around this. Everything is so individualized, it's so customized for all of my clients. It's like imagine doing that with 120 people. Like you just simply couldn't do it, right? Or like you would burn yourself out over time. So I'm curious, like with you having created that then, you know, what did it look like with like the, I'm guessing and assuming kind of like the outsourcing process? Did it make it easier for you? Did it make the scaling process easier for you? Like how did that look with having that method in place?
Yeah, that was what allowed me. And this was like another big mistake that I made was like bringing on coaches. I did it out of like pure panic and necessity of like, I can't physically take on another client. So I'm just going to start hiring without thinking about, you know, the procedure, the process, and having something where we're all speaking the same language, where the experience from one coach to another, obviously coaches have different personalities. And I always wanted that to be the case. Like I never wanted to be like, no, you have to be super robotic or whatever, but there has to be a system and a process that everybody feels like they're getting the same level of attention and they're all going through the same thing. So that was something that it took me a little while before I got everybody on the same page, but then it helped when I was able. So I've kind of had like a, all right, let's scrap everything and start fresh. And that was probably around 2019 that that happened. But then getting all of the coaches on the same page, it was so much easier to then actually scale. And then hiring was so much easier. You know, outsourcing different things, like it all just made the whole business a little bit more fluid instead of like, oh crap, there's a fire over here I have to put out. There's a fire over here I have to put out. Instead, we have like a clear system. We have processes in place that we know we can refer to if there's ever any issues. And that, you know, is really, it was like going from kind of like a personal coaching thing to an actual business.
Yeah, I mean, and do you guys feel like as a team you've been able to maintain like that closeness to your clients with even having the process?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. The
Yeah.
attention, the care, like the support, all of that has, I think it makes it easier. Because they're not constantly thinking about like we kind of all know what we're doing, and we've seen enough. And especially with the message of like who we bring in, so we're bringing in a specific type of client that works really well within our methodology. So it kind of all works together, and it creates that synergy, and then it makes the coach's job easier. And we can tell, you know, I think it's funny because a lot of times, you know, coaches will ask me about sales, and I'm like, the way that I approach sales is to repel the people that are not a good fit. Like I view the sales process as a filter process, not as a, oh, I need this client to enroll, but basically like I'm filtering out the wrong people and we're just attracting the right people. And that makes the coach's job a lot easier too.
Yeah, it's also just like I think it's just like the basis of an entire coaching company is like the product that you have, the process that you have, and then that feeds into your retention process, like you said, your sales process, which I love that mindset around sales because I feel like nowadays you kind of see a lot of like the rat race when it comes to sales and coaches like looking for the next person versus like being able to attract somebody because they have something they're so convicted in. So it's really cool to see that you've got something that's like super, super streamlined. And I was looking at, I mean, I love looking at like other coaches, just like resources and things that they have. And I know you have just like so many resources from the messaging that you have. And, you know, I think that's another thing too, is a lot of coaches don't realize like you can create different free resources, little quizzes, like all these different things when you understand the macro transformation that you get people. It's because you give these little, you know, like micro shifts to people where they're like, wait, I need to have more of this so I can actually make the full transformation. And I'm curious just because I know like you're an amazing writer and you have so many resources. Is that like one of the big ways that you get clients in outside of just having really awesome messaging? But are you using like different lead magnets, different free resources? Like what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I would say like the core of everything is the messaging first, because and that's something that I kind of started on accident. When I first started my business, I started writing emails every day because I didn't know, I wasn't like all up on social media. I just was like, I need a way of communicating with people, and email was the first thing that I thought of. So I wish I could take credit and say it was a really savvy move, but it was purely on accident. It was a very fortunate accident. And I just started writing every day. And, you know, typically what happens when you do something every day for 5.5 years, you get pretty good at it. And I just started noticing that in the beginning, because my emails were connecting so much, it was a lot of storytelling. It was a lot of, you know, problem solving. My audience, which was very small, would just start sharing that. So that was where like the leads were coming from in the beginning. It's like, hey, you got to read this guy's email. And then people would join my list. And then I was like, I should probably figure out a way to get more people on my list. And so that was when like lead magnets started to come into play. And as I started to refine that process, I realized like the resources should be more specific to what we do. And that's where like the personality assessment came into play, which is a free resource on my website. That's where like we have metabolic resources on like metabolism over 40, and that's mainly our demographic. And so stuff that is relevant to what we're actually going to be working on when they join the program. So that way we're bringing in the right kinds of people. Then there's other ways of, I just viewed it as, I know that email is the best place to convert because that's where people can really get a sense of my messaging and content and what we do and our methodology and how it all works. And I'm very much a reveal everything type of person. That's what I teach. That's what I practice. So once somebody comes into that ecosystem and they're opening up my emails or they're listening to my podcast, like they know, like the sales conversation is so effortless. I actually don't do a lot of sales calls. I'll typically just send them, you know, I'll get an inquiry and I'll send them to like an offer link. That's basically just a full outline of our entire process all laid out. And it saves me a lot of time and they're already so warmed up that it's usually a pretty easy, yes or no. And it's very straightforward. So, that was kind of like the evolution, but yeah, the, you know, bringing in people through lead magnets. And then I found that as I've dialed in my messaging, that's created more organic growth on social. So I just took the same exact concepts that I was doing for my email marketing and started doing it in my Facebook group and started doing it on Instagram. And that led to more organic growth. And, so that's kind of how like the whole customer journey plays out.
Like what a concept, right? Like give your best information, free value, just keep showing up for your people. And it's like the people that you're meant to work with come to you, you know? I feel like in our space, I don't know if you've recognized this over like the last few years too, it's like pushed a little bit away from that where there's a lot of like, you know, how can I bring in the next person when it's like, hey, if you actually just focus on like authority building, storytelling, putting out free value as much as you can, like you're going to attract the right kind of people. And that's why I love that you put out so many resources. I was like on your site the other day, Mike, and I was like, you have, if someone like is curious to work with you, it's like a no-brainer. they don't even have to think about it because you have so many resources where it'd be like, okay, this guy is like a heck yes for me or like a heck no. And like you said, it kind of has like that filter process. So it's really cool to see that you've built something that's like so specific to where people can actually consciously make a decision as to whether or not they want to actually work with you in the first place. So it's really cool that you have that. I want to ask you just a little bit about this email thing, because I know a lot of people listening, a lot of people in my audience are younger, and you said you help a lot of people over 40. Whenever I tell my clients or my students like, hey, email is a great way to go, they're like, oh, my demographic doesn't read their email. What are your thoughts on that? Like what, just firsthand, what do you think about it?
Email is still alive and well, and is it has been shown, like there was a study that was done in 2021, and I think it was of the businesses that were surveyed, over 60% of them said that email was their biggest revenue driver. And it converts well. Now, a lot of people are intimidated by it because they're like, I don't know what to write. I don't know how frequently to send. And it's the same thing when somebody's getting started on social, right? Like a lot of times they have the same question. How frequently should I post? What should I post? So I really try to help coaches like simplify that process because it really isn't complicated. It's just like anything else. What can you realistically start with? What can you realistically do? Is it once a week? Yes, great. That's where we're going to start. But what I like about email is you own it. So you don't have to worry about algorithms. Yes, you have to like worry about deliverability, but there's some easy practices that you can put into place to make sure that it's landing in the inbox, that you're getting replies. I also like it because the intent behind it if somebody opens an email, it's not like Instagram where the expected attention span is like 3 seconds. It's if somebody is opening it, there's a little bit more of an expected commitment that they're probably going to spend a couple minutes, especially if you're good at writing and you have your messaging dialed in. You know, I write typically long form and I get a lot of opens. I get a lot of replies. I get a lot of click-throughs. And I do, even though most of our clients are women over 40, like we have clients anywhere from 21 all the way up to like 60. And most of the time it's from email that they've ended up enrolling. So I know that a lot of coaches are resistant to it, but I think they're missing out on one of the best ways to build an actual asset because it's yours and you own those names, like social media, you're basically leasing. And it's just a great way to nurture. It's a great way to build trust and connection. And it's a little bit more of a, again, like an attention commitment for the reader. So I think it's a huge opportunity that a lot of coaches miss out on.
Yeah, right. And especially when you have such an awesome, you know, like you do so much with like the psychology side of things, I feel like copywriting and understanding it, like when you become a better copywriter and also better at just like selling, which, you know, kind of coincides with like marketing a bit, it's like you also become a better coach because you understand like what moves people to take action through psychology with like sales, copywriting, and then also in your coaching strategy too. And I've found that some of the best coaches are usually the ones who are also, you know, or a lot of people say the best coaches aren't great at sales, but I've actually found the ones who like truly learn how to sell in a way that's really congruent are the ones who are really great at like copywriting and also good at coaching too, you know? So cool, Mike. I have a question for you, like asking this question to everybody who's like been in our space for a minute, because you're like an OG in the space and I know you've been here for a minute. I'm curious what you feel like has been the biggest shift that you've seen recently in the coaching space.
I would say on the business side of things, I think that there was this like trend that happened where it was pretty easy. I would say probably like 3-4 years ago, especially I think COVID kind of put like this on blast, but it was pretty easy to convert like high ticket without really being skilled at marketing. And I think this was like, it's fine. There's all these business coaches that were around back then that I have no idea what they're doing. I know that their business is dissolved and you never want to see that happen, but it was all the same, like raise your rates, charge as much as you possibly can, you know, run these like, you know, either cold DMs, do these little hand raised posts and then just like slide in the DMs and get people to pay thousands of dollars. And that actually worked for a while. And it was pretty simple. Getting people from cold traffic to a high ticket offer wasn't that complicated. And it created this boom. And then especially when, like, you know, we had people at home who weren't spending as much money and they were getting free money sent to them. And it was really easy for a lot of new coaches to jump into the space and be like, this is so simple. So I think the biggest shift that we've seen is now the economy has shifted. There is more consumer awareness around those tactics. Like the cold DM strategy, nobody, like in the beginning, it was like, oh, this is so cool. This person just wants to connect with me. Now there's this like heightened sense of defensive, like, why are you messaging me and stop trying to sell me something? So there's more consumer awareness. People are a little bit tighter with their money. And I think it's like, I called it separation season. Like the coaches who are surviving and thriving are the ones that have actually taken the time to deliver a really good service. They've taken the time to understand their market. They've taken the time to improve their messaging, and you can't get away with what you could get away with, you know, several years ago. So it really is like separation season. That's the biggest shift that I'm seeing, is there's more of a need to actually care about your messaging. You have to pay attention to what your audience wants and communicate that way. Like a lot of coaches will speak to the problems of their audience in their own perspective, meaning the coach's diagnosis of the problem instead of the way that the client or their audience would describe the problem. So the coaches that are taking the time to listen to the mouths of their audience by getting in the mind of their audience so they can speak to the heart of their audience, like those are the ones that are surviving right now and thriving. And the coaches that are still in that like old school tactic of like cold traffic High ticket, like charge as much as I possibly can, cold DMs, that sort of thing. Those coaches are really struggling right now, unfortunately, but that's the biggest shift that I'm seeing.
Yeah, right. It's crazy to see. It's like a little bit of cringe marketing, like from before that you could get away with, versus now it's like, oh, a concept. Again, you like actually have to care about your people and like actually get on that level. But I will say too, Mike, and this is something I've noticed, is like you have those coaches who are so intelligent and they're so overly qualified to coach, like PhDs, like master's degrees, like so intelligent. And like I find too that sometimes you have these coaches that are so smart that it's almost hard to meet the ideal client, like at the problem level where they're currently at too. And so it requires a lot of like unpacking, and it requires a lot of really getting to know the people in a way where, hey, you can actually resonate from like a story-based storytelling level. I'm curious if you like see that too with coaches that are high level.
Oh, completely. That's like the biggest challenge. Like really smart people are difficult too. There's a really good article in the Harvard Business Review called Teaching Smart People How to Learn. And it's really difficult for people who are intelligent to basically dumb themselves down to speak to the level that's going to connect, because they come at it from such a technical expert level that it just goes over the head. Or again, they're speaking about it from their perspective instead of learning, like, how does my client view this? So like a simple example is, you know, somebody who's like, well, actually, you don't want to tone because this is what it actually means to tone. And really what, and like, you're basically creating like a combative message without even recognizing it, instead of being like, hey, my audience says they want to tone, so let's meet them where they're at. Yeah. And then once in the program, then we can show them like, hey, this is what it actually looks like. But you have to really dial in your messaging now. You have to actually understand what it looks like to market and to communicate effectively to your audience. And that's not always a natural thing, but it is a very learnable skill, just like anything. It just takes time and practice.
Yeah. And just like for coaches out there listening too, because just bouncing off of that, I remember I used to say that all the time, is like my ideal client was someone who was underfed, but at the same time, she wanted to like gain muscle mass. She wanted to be able to get toned. Like that was the word that I would always use. And I remember getting feedback from other coaches being like, toning's not a real thing. I'm like, but my ideal client thinks it is. So like, you have to speak to like what they understand and meet them where they're at, regardless of if you feel like other coaches are judging you or, you know, whatever, because you know, if you have a good service on the back end and you have a process to fulfill for what that client needs, and through the behavioral intervention and through, you know, actually building muscle, you're going to give them what they need. I think a lot of coaches look at, oh, what are other coaches thinking about me posting things? And so they filter themselves in a way where they use big jargon that just like doesn't even make sense for the ideal client. That's something I see a ton in our space now too. So I'm curious if you have like a framework or anything that you use, because like you write amazing copy and like you really meet your ideal client at the problem level. Do you have like a framework that you use, or is there something specific that's like helped support you with that?
Yeah. So what I teach for copy, like this was another thing we talk about building a process. So for the longest time, My wife would tell me, you have to outline what you're doing for your emails, because so many coaches in the, like, before I started teaching copywriting or doing anything on the business side of things, all these coaches would subscribe to my email list and be like, teach me how to write like you, teach me how to write like you. And I was like, I don't even know how to write like me. I just write. And it just is something I've been doing for so long. And my wife was like, this is going to be an opportunity. You have to outline what you're doing. And I was like, but I'm literally just writing. And then same thing that I did with my coaching process. I was like, maybe there is a framework here. So I started breaking it down and breaking down the concepts. And I was like, no, there's actually a process that I follow. So I created a framework that I call the belief shifting framework, which is basically a way of speaking to little micro problems that your ideal client has. So the first step is knowing what those micro problems are. So if we zoom out, we start with like the dream scenario for them. What do they want? Their core desires. What's the big outcome that they want more than anything in the world? And then what are all these little micro problems that get in the way of them achieving that dream outcome? And there's hundreds of them. Like if you start writing down micro problems, you'll fill up pages. And then you can take those micro problems and you can take scenarios where those micro problems show up. Like a micro problem might be they overindulge every weekend. Okay, well, now we can create a story around being super consistent all week, but overindulging on the weekend. You can tell that from a personal perspective. You can tell that from a client perspective. You can tell that from the reader's perspective. But now we have like real tangible micro problem that we're solving for. So basically, my framework for the belief shift is we align with a problem that they have in their own words. How do they articulate the problem? We give them insight into what's causing the problem. And then we spend most of the email or content or post or whatever it is solving it for them. And a lot of times I'll get pushback like, well, if we're solving the problem for them, then why would they need us? Mm-hmm. They need you because they have to implement. And that's a micro problem, right? So we want to connect the dots between how solving that micro problem leads to the dream outcome. But there's many other steps in the process. Like typically you're giving them like one piece that makes a lot of sense. And then you're showing them how that fits into the grand scope of what you do to create these amazing results for your clients. And then they view you as the solution to their problems or the process. They look at that as, okay, that's what I've been missing. And it also shows them why it's different than what they've tried before, why this is going to work for them, if they're a good fit, what they bring to the table that allows them to see those results. So there's a little bit more that goes into the belief shifting framework, but that's like the basic gist of it. Solve the micro problem, align them with the problem in their own words, give them insight into what causes it. If you can, show how it goes against the grain, like why conventional wisdom is leading them, you know, in the wrong direction, and then give them the solution and then tie that solution into your process and how you create results for your clients.
That was a bar. You guys need to write that down, go back, rewind it, listen to it 5 more times. It was so good. Cool, Mike. I'm curious if you just have any last words, any last piece of advice for any coaches listening out there.
I would say the biggest thing is listen to your audience. Your audience tells you, it's just like we tell clients, like your body tells us, listen to your body. If you're hungry all the time and you're miserable through the process and you're stressed out and your digestion's off, like pay attention to those signals. It's the same thing in business. Your audience tells you everything you need to know. It is just a matter of listening. So a lot of times we have these concepts that we think are going to convert really well. We're like, no, my clients care a lot about whatever, hormone health or metabolism or stress or cortisol. They'll tell you if they actually care about it. So don't be the stubborn coach who's like jamming a concept down their throat because you think it's important. Listen, just pay attention. It is very easy to tell if you just listen what concepts are converting, the language that they use, listen to the words that they use. Pay attention and just ask those questions, especially if you're working with people. You already, like, who are your dream clients, the people that you love working with already? They are more than happy to answer some questions as to why they chose you, what about your process they enjoy, what was the pain. Like, get into the psychographics of your clients, meaning how do they think? What are the emotions that they felt before they solved the problem? What are the emotions they feel now that they've solved the problem with you? Like, all of that is gold. Just listen and ask the right questions and you'll have all the answers that you need to create really resonant content and messaging that basically serves as the lifeline of your business.
So good, Mike. Thank you for sharing that. Where can everybody find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at coach_Mike_Milner. And there's 2 L's in Milner. I also have a podcast called Mind Over Macros. So on my podcast, I do 3 episodes a week. Mondays and Wednesdays are for clients, basically people who want to transform and, you know, are interested in nutrition, fitness, mindset, personal development. But then every Friday, I do a series for coaches in particular. And that's all about marketing and messaging and content and copywriting. And so it's more for coaches who want some help on the business side of things. So that's every Friday. Mind Over Macros, it's on any podcast platform. So those are the 2 best places to connect.
Cool. Wicked, Mike. Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.